this week on Writing Fiction, Regina came up with the idea of creativity as child's play.
Yep.
And we're going to talk about that. But before we do, let's talk about some business. We got bookworms. Okay. When do we feel bookworms is out? At the end of April or beginning of April? The end of April, right? Or beginning?
What, the new one?
The one that's coming out, yeah.
May.
Oh, May. Oh,
May, sorry. No, the deadline is the end of April.
Oh, okay, okay.
So we've got some time.
Okay.
So, don't put me into a panic, James.
I know, sorry. You can still get issue 4 and issue 2. And we're attempting to put some merch. So I did put the t-shirt out there.
I saw the t-shirt. I love it. I want mine.
It's just in one color, black. That way we don't put you through that decision paralysis.
Right.
I heard that was actually a thing. Like people, when they go on sites and they want to get a shirt and there's just too many colors, it just stops them in their tracks.
Okay.
And most people,
I think black is perfect.
It looks great with the artwork. So it's Charlie's artwork from issue 1. So it's the cover of issue 1, which I think is pretty cool.
Very cool.
And I'm definitely going to get my own as well. Okay. If you want to support the show, support Bookworms, you can pick it up on our bookwormshorror.etsy.com. The link is in the show notes. I also put a mug there, but that was a test to see if it... I'll leave it there, but it's a funny mug.
I like the mug too.
Yeah, it's coffee. It's a coffee mug, and it says "coffee because murder is wrong."
Like, don't talk to me before my coffee.
Yep, I'll leave it up there. But that was I was testing this if we could do it because I didn't know that Printify and Etsy work together, which is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
All right. Well, I did put a newsletter out. I didn't put a newsletter out. I put up an article I wrote about can creativity be taught, and that. Syncs up. We'll get into that, I guess, today. But if you want to read that, it is on the newsletter. I also put it on Medium because it's a very similar. It works on both websites. What about you?
Yes. And
you? Yeah, what you said. You have a blog that you just put up, or
I did. I wrote a supplemental short story, a supplemental for Carney.
Ooh.
So if you remember in Carney, part of Aurora's research was that the spirit of Carney started as this court jester in medieval early Renaissance Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And his name was Aldo.
Right. So
it's just a short mention of it in the book. And I thought I would expand that idea. So I wrote a short story and I submitted it to the clown anthology, Fear of Clowns, and was rejected.
It's okay.
It's okay.
I'm sure I'll be in that pile with you, I'm sure, but I'm still working on mine.
I'm hoping one of us gets in.
Well, I would like that. Anybody who's read Carney is now super excited because I can't wait to get off this podcast and read it. So where can I read it?
It's on rstclair.com, which is my blog, and it's also on my Patreon page, but it's accessible to anyone, so anyone can read it.
That's cool.
And it's a short story, but it goes into the ancient curse of that becomes Carney.
That's so cool.
It's an origin story. So, it was fun to write. So even though, like I said, it was rejected, I'm fine with that, and because... I think what I'm going to do is in my second printing of Carney, I will include it in the back.
Oh, that's fun too.
As an extra. Speaking of Carney, I did want to mention that I got a BookBub deal that starts today. And probably a lot of our writers are familiar with BookBub. It's kind of the holy grail of book promotion.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to get a book accepted. Even though it costs you money, because what they are is it's an enormous database of emails, and they blast every day, different book deals. So if a book is on sale that week or whatever, this email blast lists them, and they have different ones for each category. So there's horror, there's romance, and it changes every day, I think. And like I said, it's very hard to get now. I did not get the U.S. List. I got the English speaking European. Oh no, it's Canada, UK, and Australia.
Okay.
So it starts today. If you're in any of those countries, you can buy Carney for 99 cents for the next week. And I'm hoping to get more readers through this and make at least my money back that I paid for it, which honestly wasn't that high. I think the USA one is a lot higher. It's a couple hundred dollars.
Oh, okay.
Well, so yeah. Well, thank you. I'm excited. The only other time I ever got one was with Local Haunts, the first horror tube anthology.
Mm-hmm.
And that was also Canada. I think it was Canada and UK.
So have you like tried with each book?
Yeah, I think every time I've done a new release, I will try. But you have to, there are a lot of, you can find a lot of information and blogs about people's experience on BookBub and a lot of frequently asked questions type of thing. But you should have at least, I think, 20 or more reviews, like overwhelmingly positive reviews, or they won't accept it. I don't know what their criteria are exactly, but most of my books have been rejected, but now this one got it in, so I'm happy.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
What about YouTube? Have you recently posted anything?
I haven't in about a week, but I will be posting something this week. I just did a recent, like you did, I did a thrift shop haul and got a lot of cool stuff. So I think I'll be doing a haul video. And then I'm also working on my Omen deep dive. So I've watched the first three Omen movies. I read the book, the first book. I'm halfway through the second book, and I'll work my way through the next book in anticipation for the new movie that's coming out in April.
You know what's funny? You've been talking about this for a couple of weeks now, and I didn't even know there was a new Omen coming out.
Oh, okay.
And I saw the trailer, and I was like, oh, now I get it. Because it felt like, why is she reading all the Omens? But now, yeah, in anticipation for the movie, are you thinking you're going to like it?
I liked the trailer.
Yeah, but did you like the Exorcist trailer?
No.
Really? I did like the Exorcist trailer, the new one. I haven't seen it yet, but I liked the trailer.
Oh, it was so bad. I did a.
So I'm hoping you have a better experience with the Omen.
Me too. I will be watching that in the theater, and if you want to join me, James.
Okay.
Let me know.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to
seeing. It's been a while since we've done that.
Yeah, I think the last time was X.
It was.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have to go see The Omen.
Yeah.
And I posted, actually, my most recent video is, do you have a first edition of The Dead Zone by Stephen King?
I saw that, and I have to check my Dead Zone. I don't think it's a first edition.
You know what's interesting? After I did that and posted it, I went onto eBay, and there are so many people claiming they are selling first editions, and they're not. So be careful. People are selling for hundreds of dollars, and it's clearly not a first edition.
I did a video about my Stephen King collection. I don't know if you watched that years ago.
Oh, I'm going to check it out.
Looking through all my Stephen King books to see, and then I tallied up how much they were worth based on, and I'm sure I put the link in my video, but I don't remember what it is now. Maybe you know it, but there's a really good resource of Stephen King books, how to tell which ones are the first editions, the collectors, and there are things like you can open a page and way down in like the what do you call this?
Copyright page?
I should know my parts of the book. Like when you open a book, the spine, but the inner, they're like words written or numbers.
Okay.
There are all kinds of clues. And this website breaks it down.
I think the website is called StephenKingCollection.com.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It is. That is what it's called.
I found that one too. I do have a first edition Dark Half, which I might do a video on and show people how they can find out if they have a first edition.
Yeah, I have The Stand. I have a first edition of The Stand.
Ooh, that's nice.
Yeah, it is nice. The dust jacket, I have it in like plastic. It's not, the dust jacket's a little worn, but it's not a bad copy.
No, I like that cover.
I love that cover.
Yeah. Yeah, I did that, and I'll probably be doing, I don't know if I'll be doing a thrift store haul next or if I'm going to do the Dark Half, but I got a lot of videos planned, so.
Good. I like those Stephen King videos.
Yeah, they're fun. So on Instagram, we are at Bookworms Horror Zine on Instagram.
Right.
The Etsy is at is bookwormshorror.etsy.com. And then the Instagram is at bookwormshorrorzine. So you can check us out and reach out to us if you have anything to say. And then writing, are you still doing the Wattpad?
I am. I did a chapter this morning.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm back on track. I was really busy the last couple of weeks working at the theater, and the show's opening this week, so I have more time to write. And gosh, it feels good to get back into writing. I was really missing it because I went for about a week without writing. So today it just felt really good to get back in the saddle.
Yeah. And we missed like last week's podcast because you were busy. I was recovering from an illness. So
yeah,
those two things, you know, it may happen, but we'll be back. So we're here and I'm excited to talk about creativity. Now I woke up at 5 a.m. yesterday and worked on the clown story and edited it. And I was planning on doing it today, but I forgot I had to drive my son to the train station so he can get back to college. So I got up at 5 and then did that. And so I'm exhausted, but I'm going to do the writing later today. But I'm going to try to keep waking up early and doing that writing because it felt good.
Yeah. I believe in the early effort myself.
Well, it's the only time I have to myself. It feels really good because if I don't, there's always something I have to be doing. But that time of day, I don't have any responsibilities and I could just write.
It's also, I believe, the time when your mind, after sleep, when you wake up, you're refreshed, or you should be, have a little coffee or tea or whatever, and then the world hasn't really come in yet. You know, you're not getting texts and calls and emails. It's like your brain is a little more open to the muse at that time, I believe.
Well, I believe it's that time and very late at night. So when I was younger, most of my creativity happened when I was younger, late at night after everybody went to sleep. And I feel like it's the same thing. There's this sort of, the rest of the world is not awake yet, either late at night or in the morning. And you have this sort of freeness to create.
Absolutely. So, and that gets into what you need to create. And a lot of times it's solitude and shutting out some distractions or as many as you can.
Yeah. If we're talking about creativity as child's play.
Yep.
And I know we've talked about this before, but what did you love doing as a child?
Well, creativity was absolutely just part of my day-to-day life. And looking back, I thought everyone grew up like that, but they really don't. So I have to really hand it to my parents for, it was more like they weren't leading our creativity. They were just giving us the freedom to do that. And because I grew up in the country and we didn't have a lot of distractions like the computer and all these things we have now, and our television had three channels, plus one if you held the antenna, took turns holding the antenna. We told that story before.
Well, you had four, I guess, VHF and three UHF.
Yeah, well, that was the one you had to hold the channel to get the UHF. But there was really not a lot to do except be creative. And we just, I mean, one thing I remember doing, and I think this, I recommend, maybe this could be an exercise for creativity. It was really fun. When we were kids, we would do this thing called draw-ins. I guess it was the 60s. Everything was like love-in, you know, it was a draw-in. Mm-hmm. We thought we were hippie that way. But we would listen to the radio, WFIL in Philly, and we would have stacks of, my aunt worked as a secretary, and she would give us like scrap paper with like computer paper with stuff on the back.
Mm-hmm.
And we would just draw. The duration of the song, we had to draw the song or like our interpretation of the song. So it would last like 4 minutes. So we'd do a quick sketch and we would just do that for hours. That was one thing. And it taught me how to just, I don't know, just be creative and draw. Did a lot of drawing.
Tell me like how that made you feel.
Well, it made me feel great because it was just me and it was usually me and my older sister, and then my younger sister, my brother sometimes joined in. I felt like I was in the zone without really knowing what that meant. I was just focused. Oh, the song's playing. I remember, I think we're alone now.
Oh,
that song's
no.
really big.
That's not Tiffany.
No, not the Tiffany.
Oh yeah, because it was the 60s.
It was a 60s song. You have to remember how old I am. And that was one of my favorite songs. Of course, the Monkees. And then and a lot of times it was drawings, plus we drew, and I wish we had kept them. My sister kept a few. We just would do these elaborate comics with musical numbers. And I think a lot of it came from reading Mad Magazine. And we would write songs constantly and put on plays in the backyard. I mean, it just never ended. And writing stories. So when I was in school, you know, I was always the kid who won the poster contest or the short story contest because I was always doing it. But when it became like, now you've got to make a living doing something, then the pressure was on. And that's why I say it's like child's play. As creatives, we need to get back to, we need to get back to being a kid doing this or having that kind of freedom. Because once you start thinking of it in terms of, oh, this is something I've got to put this pressure on myself, it kind of kills it, kills the spirit. It can kill the spirit.
Yeah, and this is the part where when you would do play, and I know when I'll talk about what I did, but when we would do that as children, I don't remember waking up and saying, oh, I got to play today. You know, like,
no, right.
Like, oh, how am I going to, I really want to be creative, but, you know, I don't have time to play. Like, you had time. We can argue that you had more time then, but I would argue that's not true.
Right. You might have had a little more energy then.
That's right. You might have had energy. But the thing was, we prioritized play.
Yes. Yeah. And it would sometimes go into the next day. Like often, mm-hmm. you know, we pick up where we left off with the production of A Wizard of Oz or whatever we were doing in the backyard. And I have a lot of old Super 8 home movies of us doing this. And our parents just like let us do it. There was never a sense of, oh, you got to put the toys away and do your homework. I mean, we just would do this. And I think it was just because we stayed out of my mother's hair.
Right. I was just going to say that.
But we also had I lived in the country with a barn, and we would play elaborate games like a manhunt late at night with my cousins, and we'd run all over Buckingham Mountain like wild children. We were very free range.
And Lord of the Flies.
It was Lord of the Flies sometimes, but you know, it was great. I'm so grateful. It taught me how to be creative. I just have to remind myself now how to get back to that sometimes.
Yeah, when I look back on my creativity growing up, before I got into music, I had a very sick mind, I think, because, you know.
Sorry, laughing.
No, it was like the 80s, and I remember early 80s doing my own cartoons of the Smurfs, but it always ended in murder. It was blood everywhere. Like, it was just Smurfs killing each other.
Oh, my God.
And then I did a newspaper. I used to have this newspaper called Weirdo News, and it was taking pieces of the newspaper and using the image and writing a story behind that image that was just out there. Like, there was one I remember of a jogger, but I had like a hanger going through her face, like puncturing her eye. And, you know, like, and then I would write the story behind that. Like, I would draw on the actual newspaper articles, like the
I love this idea.
Well, Weirdo News ended up, I actually have a cassette tape. My friend Brian and I, growing up, he actually recently gave me the tape, and we used to do like a radio show, and which I'm doing now, but we would do Weirdo News, but as an audio radio show, and we would just talk about stuff. And I got to get that cassette and transfer it.
Oh,
it's
definitely
on cassette, but yeah, it's on, I got to digitize that. But most of the stuff, I remember even when I was real young, we had to do a poem in school. And I know the poem to this day because it was real short, but it was, there once was a cat named Fred who never got out of his bed. I awoke one night in a terrible fright and found that Fred was dead. My teacher must have been like, what's wrong with this kid?
Well, see, I'm wondering, like, now, would you have been, you know, referred to some kind of school counselor?
Who knows?
No.
No, I know.
But you know what I mean? Like, I think kids, we've lost a lot of freedom with this digital age. I mean, we've gained a lot of great things, of course, but we've lost a lot of freedom with it too. I think that I believe in the creative spirit, and it's also kind of amazing, like the people that are getting into, like my husband Joe is really into old time music, mm-hmm. and there are a lot of young people now playing it because they're on YouTube. So there are like really cool things happening. I don't mean to be like doom and gloom, but I think getting back to Child's Play, like I challenged myself today. One thing I want to start doing now that I have a little more time is sketching every day. Like I loved when you had your sketch for Halloween, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania. That was so much fun. And I did it every day and it took me like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes and I had a blast. And I was thinking about, oh, I need, that's a beautiful tree. I want to sketch that. And immediately my head went to Instagram. Like, oh, should I post it on, you know?
Oh,
like,
I know. Why do we, yeah, know? that's.
And I'm like, no. It's not about Instagram. It's not about posting it or what people are going to think. Get that out of your head. It's going back to when you're a kid where you didn't, I mean, maybe your mother would put it on the refrigerator, but you know.
Yeah, that is something that I fall prey to when, no matter what it is, I'll be like, oh, let me do this. And then I'm like, oh, you know, Instagram. And you're right. It's not everything has to be out there. And I feel that's like us trying to validate ourselves because that's the new norm is to be like, it's not real unless it's on social media.
Right.
When it comes to writing, again, when I was a kid, this was really silly, but at the time I thought it was, you know, going to be great. After I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, so I must have been 10 or 11, and Raiders of the Lost Ark came out, and I immediately went home and wrote a sequel. And the sequel was set in my neighborhood because I thought we could shoot it, right? Mm-hmm. And we had like this barn up that was up our road, like in the woods, and it was like falling apart, this barn. It's not there anymore. But that was like a setting. And I wrote this thing, how we had to go back. Like, it wasn't like a whole new adventure. I was starting it out as we were going to break into where the Ark is and steal the Ark back. But I didn't ever stop to think, you know, why are you doing this? You know, or is this good? Or like, to me, it was just like, I'm writing this. I had fun doing it. I had mm-hmm. no idea like what, like it didn't amount to anything, but that's not the point.
No, it's not the point. It is not the point. And I think that is the point of this discussion is it's a way to approach creativity that is free and you might strike gold or you might just have a good time doing it. It doesn't have to lead to anything if you don't want it to. I mean, that's something like when you're talking about that weirdo news, to me, that seems like something that could have made you famous, you know?
Yeah.
But I did a lot of stuff that could have made me famous too, and I'm not, but it's just, you know, it's one of those things. When you're open to that kind of stuff, you'll be like, yeah, I want to do this. And you don't question it when you're a kid.
Yeah, I think that's what you have to bring into your adulthood is doing it and not having, like stopping those thoughts that come in after that idea comes up. Mm-hmm. You know, there's that idea is coming into your head. Explore that and play with it and see what it amounts to. But don't give up before you even start playing.
Right. Know? Because you don't know where it's going to lead to. And it doesn't have to lead to anything.
No.
I mean, I think it's weird because we think of creativity that way. Like, and it sometimes it's external voices and a lot of times it's internal voices of like, well, what is this getting you?
Right.
You know, but we don't think of other things that way. Like, I mean, exercise, for example. You know, and I don't, you know, you can go out and jog and condition your body a little bit, but it doesn't mean you're going to be an Olympiad.
I would argue that you could say with exercise, there are benefits for health and physique, I guess,
sure.
You know,
and there are goals, but you can just do it because it feels good.
Yeah. And with writing, you're writing your story. No matter at the very least, you're improving your craft.
Yes.
And hopefully if you do it as a habit, you will create a habit of writing. And so then you're creating a habit of improving your craft.
Right. It's hard not to have expectations attached to a lot of this stuff. I struggle with that too. And I'm not saying expectations are bad, but if you can get out of your own way sometimes with that, you can strike gold. Like, for example, I think you could be really disappointed if any of us sets out to write something with a purpose of something, right? Like, I wrote my clown story with a purpose of getting into this anthology. I wasn't, but I had another secondary goal in mind, which is, it's part of my Carney mythos. So yeah, it's great. I'm perfectly happy with it not getting into the anthology and using it on my own terms. But if I put all this expectation about that story and then it doesn't get into the anthology and I'm disappointed, it's kind of a waste, you know?
Yeah, I think the key to submitting is it gets you to work. And then once it submitted, that's not in your control. And it's okay to have moments of feeling let down. I mean, that's normal. Those are normal feelings. But you got to say, okay, and just get what they say, the cliche, get back on the horse.
Yeah. I mean, you just have to know that the stakes are against you. So when you do get a win, celebrate and feel good about it. But the Child's Play thing, I came up with that. I mean, it's not an original idea, obviously, but I was thinking about that and I wrote a comment on your Medium blog or whatever about creativity. And I was watching live music the other night. Joe and Greg McGarvey were playing in Bristol at the Mural Plaza, which is really nice. And I saw these two little girls out dancing. And they were like, I don't know, 5 or 6 years old. And they were dancing with such abandon and freedom and fun. And my friend Kathy was sitting next to me and she's a few years older than me. I'm like, what would happen if like we got up there? Not like dancing, like we could get up there and dance, but like spinning and going nuts the way these kids were.
Right.
And we were like, we'd probably be arrested or something. Or people would think that we were crazy or someone would take a video of us on their phone and post it and like make fun of us on Twitter or something. Like, look at this, the old ladies dancing. But I'm like, you know, those kids got the right idea. And then on Saturday, I went to St. Patrick's Day celebration at Shady Brook, and Righteous and Greg's band were playing for St. Patrick's Day, the Jolly Tinkers. And it was a lot of fun. And the same thing, the kids were up there going crazy, dancing around. All the adults, including me, because it's a long story, but I'm just watching all these kids and really thinking about they understand it.
Yeah. There's a book called The Power of Fun by Catherine Price. And that would be my suggestion if you want to get that fun back into your life. And if you want to hear her talk, there's a podcast called The Happiness Lab, and just look for the episode with Catherine Price, and you'll learn. It's really kind of fun. I think she coins this word of funtervention.
Okay, I like that.
And so the host of The Happiness Lab tries to introduce fun into her life because she starts thinking, you know, why are we not having fun? It just seems like something. And they define fun in a really specific way, but it's definitely a good book and a great podcast episode to listen to, because I think that's what we're trying to get at.
Yeah. It's fun and freedom, I think, and lack of self-consciousness and not thinking about the product so much, but the process.
Yeah, because there's a time to think about the product, and that's not when you're writing. You know, maybe when you're editing, but that's still craft. Like when I would write a song back in the day, I would always be like sitting there by myself writing a song. Then I would bring it to the band and then we'd all kind of work on it. And it wasn't until, you know, we had the songs down that we then would start thinking about playing somewhere. You know, because it makes sense in this example, you can't go to a club and say, hey, we'd love to play at your club. And then you don't even have any songs. Right.
Right.
So,
right.
And so like, you can't think about the clubs. You got to get the songs down. You have to get not just written, but performed properly. And then you can start thinking about what can I do with this product?
Yeah.
And in writing, it's the same way.
I guess you could work backwards from that too. Like, I really want to play at this club.
Well, that's how I actually, that's funny you say that. You're right. I remember, even before, when I was in high school in Bensalem, they did not have a, they used to have a battle of the bands, but for whatever reason, when I got to ninth grade, they didn't have it anymore. And so like, I don't know, I was about to graduate when I was a senior, and I was like, why? That was the one thing I wanted to do, was starting from that place, was I want to play in front of the school at a battle of the bands.
Yeah.
So I asked one of the school, the teachers, and they're like, well, there's some guy, the chess club is looking for a fundraiser. And so I went to that guy, and he's like, do you think we'll make money? I'm like, yeah. And they did. They made a crazy amount of money for the, I don't know what they did, buy gold chess pieces. You know, they made so much money.
They had a really fun chess trip.
But that's true. Like, you can start with your end goal in mind and then work up to that. And that's what I did in that case. And I think that's, if you want to get published, you know that's your goal, but you got to work and build the products that you need to sell.
Yeah. I read a book called The Bestseller Code. Mm-hmm. Have you heard about this?
No, but I'm going to write this down and put it in my, I have so many writing books, but I love reading them.
I can loan you mine, my copy. It's all about, these people did all the statistics on what these different bestsellers had in common and then wrote it into a book. And they actually broke it down like chapter by chapter, what something like The Da Vinci Code does, or Twilight, or 50 Shades of Grey. They had several examples of, I mean, like huge bestsellers, what they had in common. So you could actually use those statistics. I read the book, but I didn't apply it. Maybe I did in some ways, I don't remember, but you could write that. That could be an act of creativity. I'm going to use this step-by-step process and see if I can write a bestseller based on these statistics.
Let me ask you this. You think that takes the fun out of it?
That's a good question.
And does it take out the, will it limit the creativity of it? Like,
I don't know. I think you can be very creative within a constraint like that.
Yeah. I think constraints are excellent for creativity.
I do too. Actually, I do too.
And that goes back to child's play. Is like, when I remember playing, I don't remember the constraints, but I know I had nothing. We used to shoot with a Super 8. We used to make movies with a Super 8 camera. And we would make these little, one of them was like Mr. Bill. You remember Mr. Bill on Saturday Night Live?
No.
We did that, but we did it with E.T. So we had a clay E.T. that would go and be destroyed by everything we would do. So we did a volcano that burned down everything and melted the plastic dinosaurs. Because E.T. went through time. So we did a volcano with dinosaurs. Then he went through another time warp and he ended up, remember the Fisher-Price Castle?
Yes.
So he ended up in the medieval times. But every time, it's like, oh no, Mr. Bill. You know, it was like E.T. though, because we were just so over E.T. by that time.
That's amazing.
But that I had so much fun doing that. I wish I had those, you know, those 8mm.
You don't have the movies anymore?
No, I don't.
Somewhere?
No.
Because
it was my friend's camera and it was his, you know, and he shot it. I don't know where this stuff is now. But I remember, one, having so much fun, and, you know, you didn't edit. You edited it in camera back then. So you would take your shot, and then the next scene you'd shoot. So you would edit just by shooting in order of the film. And then we would walk up to the mall, get the film processed, wait a couple days, and then we had a projector, and we'd have our friends come over and watch it.
I know. It was great. I remember doing that, and I do have quite a few of the old we converted them to VHS tape a while ago, but I did this in-camera edit when I was about 13. It's pretty embarrassing, but when I'm pretending like I'm driving.
Nice.
By holding like a steering wheel and going to, I think some TV shows, you just go on your butt like down the street.
Okay.
So I was just basically me sitting on the ground with a steering wheel. And then I had my sister shot it, and then we would do it in camera. Then I move a few feet, you know, so it looks like I'm moving. Like, that took creativity to come up with that.
And you didn't, right. And you had restrictions. So a lot of people today will say, well, I can't do that because I don't have the Scrivener app, or I don't have the right tools, or I need to get, if I'm shooting video, can't do it until I get that light. And none of that would matter if you were a kid.
None of it matters now. No.
Right. It doesn't matter now. You just, especially with writing, because you don't need that much tools. All you need is pen and paper at the least.
At the least.
And you know what's crazy is people will sit there and say, oh, it's just, you know, I need a computer and I can't write because I don't have a computer, and computers are expensive. But boy, I've just listened to I'm going to do a video on this. I just finished a book called The Mystery of Mysteries, The Death and Life of Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh.
And when I think about Poe, I mean, he's not typing. He's not even using a typewriter. This is ink on paper.
Like a quill pen or something.
Yeah, and he was very prolific, and he wrote so much. And it's like, why do we now feel that if you were a kid and you didn't have a computer, you would just get paper and write? You would not say, well, I can't do this yet.
Well, that's a good question. That would be interesting to see. Since the dawn of all this technology, where any kid can make a movie with their phone, and you know, sometimes they're uploading to TikTok and stuff like that, and some of that can be very creative. But has the technology made people more creative, less creative, or just the same?
That's interesting. I don't know the answer. I would say if I was the kid growing, so I don't know. Like, I always say, if I had this when I was a kid, man, I would be making stuff every day. And if I don't see my kids doing it, I'm like, why aren't you doing stuff? Like, you have all of this technology to do whatever. You could literally even write a book as a kid and put it on Kindle. All you do is probably have to ask your parents to just be the publisher, you know, but you could sell stuff. You could sell your art, and all this is available. Does that make it like people don't think much of it anymore because it is available?
Yes. Is it lost its specialness because anyone can do it?
I don't know the answer to that, because I just know what I like about it. But I do know that when you ever see like a video that gets memed or whatever you want to call it, and I'm always impressed at the creativity, how somebody can take one video and all these different people edit it different ways. Like, they'll have a video, but Darth Vader's in it or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many different versions of that meme that different people got creative with. And they're usually short videos, and it's like on TikTok or Instagram or YouTube. Yeah. But I'm always impressed by that creativity that exists. But that's also, I think, memes, that really short stuff and those funny clips, those are people being childlike.
Yeah, I think memes are great, actually. I think memes are very creative, and their commentary that cuts through with using humor, usually a lot of bull in a satirical way. That's always, I think, probably since the beginning of time, has always been there. And some caveman was doing some graffiti meme or something, like to you know, make fun of someone else. I do think memes are fascinating.
Yeah.
And they're kind of like a shorthand in our world where the attention spans are just being grabbed left and right. But I find that there's too much of stimulation, digital stimulation. Like, I can't stand when I go to the Wawa to pump my gas, and now there's a video advertising to me.
Yeah.
Like, there's no escape. I finally paid for, and I think I told you this, for YouTube Premium. It's the best money I've ever spent. It's so great to not have to deal with ads.
And we are not sponsored by YouTube, so that is
That
is absolutely her opinion. And
it's my opinion.
It's her opinion, and we're not being paid for that. So
that's... Hey, well, YouTube got my money for the convenience of me not having to watch ads.
Yeah. The only time I bought YouTube was back when Cobra Kai came out, And that was only, originally, it was only on YouTube, and you had to be a subscriber to them. So I got it for that specific show. And then when that show ended, that season ended, I turned it off. And then now it's on Netflix. So
I never watched it, but I heard it was good.
It's very good. I know it's hard to be childlike a lot. I know, though, I am. So there was, who said it? I think was it Roald Dahl? I don't know, but there's a quote that says, artists are just children who refuse to put down their crayons.
Yeah, I like that.
And I like that too. And I think that's what the core here is.
And people like who aren't, the people who don't agree that you should, the people who are always saying, oh, you got to put your toys away, they can get annoyed when people act childlike. Like, for example, if you ever go to the Metropolitan or the Modern Museum in New York with someone who's not into art, and they go, like I have, and they go nuts when they see the modern paintings, and this is like a child could do this, and they get angry.
They do. They get angry at Jackson Pollock and Mondrian.
Right, they get really angry.
Yeah, it's like, that's just four colors. You know, I could do that. But you didn't. And that's the point, is like, after the fact doesn't count. You know, if you go and copy somebody's modern art, that means nothing. You didn't come up with it, and you don't understand it either. But I agree, like, what people really, I hate the idea of you got to grow up.
Yeah, I don't like that that idea of it's time to put the toys away. And I think no artist should ever listen to that. You will get that. You'll get that from family members, sometimes friends, even professors and things. You know, you'll get that drummed into you. And if you believe it, you're shooting yourself in the foot if you want to be creative.
I agree. The one thing I love about bookworms, the zine, is how you and I are doing this. I feel like we would have done this if we were 13.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it feels that way.
It feels like, let's put a magazine out there, and we're doing it in the style of that, as if we were 13 and we like horror and spooky things, and we're going to put it out there and sell it to our friends at school.
That's why it's so much fun doing it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, starting with that in mind, where we consciously said, we're going to do this with the idea of just doing it old school, and I think that makes it fun, as opposed to like if we would have started out with a 5-year plan and a business plan and talking to all these, you know, then we just killed it right away.
Yeah, we never would have got off the ground if we had done that. I mean, look, when you're doing a risky business or high investment, you do need probably all that stuff to make your investors feel secure. However, I'm not a business person. I've never been successful at business, but I know how to be creative, and I know you do too, because we've been doing it our whole lives. And
right.
I kind of take it for granted on some levels. Like, I do deal with resistance, but I know what it is now. Like in the War of Art. Yeah. I love that book.
Stephen Pressfield. Yeah, it's a great book.
It's great. And he talks a lot in that book about resistance. So when someone says, hey, you got to put the toys away, that's a form of resistance. When you say it to yourself, that's a form of resistance. And you have to overcome that in order to, or you should, I don't say have to, you should work on overcoming that if you want to be creative, because those things will stop you in your tracks.
And we're not talking about screw the business part of this, right?
No.
We're talking about, it starts with the creativity part, and you need to be connected to that to create your art. Like I said, once it's done, you can go find where you want to. A lot of times throughout history, great artists have a partner who is somebody who's really good at business part of it. Like,
or a patron.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're going way back, you know.
Well, yeah. But I mean, like the Renaissance artists, they had patrons, and they had to do a specific, let's say, religious scene.
Mm-hmm.
They were getting paid to do that scene. Well, within that scene, they made some miracles happen. So that's the constraint, is what I'm saying.
Right. But I'm talking even modern times, you would have Walt Disney and Roy Disney, right? Roy was the business guy. Walt was the artist. And you had, you know, the Beatles and George Martin. And, you know,
I've been looking for that guy my whole life.
Yeah, I agree. But that's the thing, you know, you either have to become that guy,
right,
or you have to find that guy. But you're not going to become or find, you could become that guy, but you're not going to find somebody if you didn't start being that child person who is creating from the heart, from just the pure joy of doing it.
Yeah, and if you really want to feel like, I think a lot of resistance comes from, well, I'm not good enough. And that can be like a deep-seated kind of insecurity. But if you go out and just look around, or this could be one of the assignments for creativity, look at commercial art. And some of it's very good, and some of it's really bad. Like if you walk through a train station, look at the artwork on the walls. Somebody got paid to create that. You know, someone bought that. And that to me makes me feel like, oh, well, if someone got paid to do that, you know, what am I worried about? You know what I'm saying? Like it's not like a big deal. It's really about freeing yourself and saying, you know, what do I come up with? I'm going to stand behind it. Or if it's just a sketch, like when I was a kid doing our draw-ins, it goes in the pile of sketches. It's all okay.
Yeah, it's interesting because according to the book, Edgar Allan Poe thought a lot about himself. He didn't think he sucked. Like
right.
he knew his genius. But that also caused problems for him. He was, you know, well, he only got, what, $20 for the Raven or something like that. He basically died poor, you know, like
yeah.
He is more famous now than he was in his life. And he, according to the book, would be upset that people think of him as he's a horror writer. Because at first he just felt he was a poet. The mm-hmm. horror writing was like writing to the market, as we would say. He knew he was good, but that's a danger too. You don't like people who are arrogant. You know, you
aren't popular.
Yeah, and
well, they can be.
I don't think he was very charming and all that. I'm not saying he was arrogant, but there were moments where he really was confrontational with a lot of people. And I think it's because it's hard when you know what you're doing has value and nobody's giving you that. So
yeah.
I don't think there's a win-win. Like you either feel like I suck or you feel you're good and nobody's recognizing you. And I think that's where when you think of it as child's play, you don't care.
Yeah.
I didn't care that if somebody came up and said, Weirdo News is stupid.
It's dumb. Yeah.
Hey, what are you doing? Like, I didn't care. I just had fun making that stuff.
And I think that's an interesting topic you brought up about confidence. And sometimes, well, let me ask you this question, because I know I've been accused of this, and I'm always sort of surprised. Have you ever been accused of being like arrogant or about your work or overconfident? Like the way, you know, Poe would have been.
No, I don't think I've ever been accused of that. I have been arrogant, you know, like in life.
Well, I know that.
Like, I think, like,
no, but like
about what I've created, I don't think so, because I don't think I go out and talk much about it.
Okay, because I know, like, Joe went through that. My husband Joe, he was in art school, and he, to him, he was just making art, and people were like, "You think you're so great?" And he's like, "What? What are you talking about?" Like, I've gotten like jabs at that sometimes too with my stuff, and like that's also part of the creative process, like learning to not really care what anyone else thinks. Like, don't let them stop you, I guess is my point.
Yeah.
There was, I don't like Ayn Rand. I don't like her principles, but I do remember I went through an Ayn Rand period when I was in high school because I, you know, thought that was cool before I really understood how the world works. But she said in one of her books, I forget which one, don't be concerned with who, with whom is going to let you. It's who's going to stop you that you need to worry
that's
about.
Really good. Yeah.
Yeah, that is good. So it's like you don't have to ask permission to be creative.
That's
ever.
Really interesting.
But some people will try to stop you because of their own hangups, and just be aware of that.
How would you sum this podcast episode up?
I would sum it up by saying, you know, think about yourself when you were a kid, when you did creative things, whatever it was, how did it make you feel? Like the question you asked me, which I think is a really good question. And how could you do that today? Even if it's just for an hour of writing or sketching or playing guitar or whatever it is, how can you just be really free with creativity and not worry about any of those other adult questions that we torture ourselves with, and just be like a kid in a sandbox, exploring, having fun, coming up with some great ideas, and really getting into the spirit of that.
Yeah, it's great. I would say, I had a therapist once say, like, be your own parent, you know, like, and that's mostly like, if my son said, I want to write a book and get it published, I would do everything in my power to make sure he has all the things he needs to do that. I would support it. And so, like, if you grew up and you didn't have that, you didn't have that kind of support, the idea is, like, can you support, be your own parent and give that same advice you give your own kid to yourself, and be there and support yourself. And then once that is there, I would say, wake up tomorrow and let that parent just say to you, go out and play. And then give yourself permission to go out and play and sit down at the computer or however you write, and then take whatever time you normally take and just play and write that story. You know,
and don't be like, you loser, when are you going to get a job? All you want to do is draw and play guitar.
Right. If that's the parent you grew up with, you know, you got to sit there and you have a new voice. You got to tell yourself, like, what you want it to hear.
Yeah. And that could be your inner voice, that you're doing that to yourself.
Everyone does that to themselves. But
we all do it to some degree.
Yeah. You got to turn it off and you got to play. And that's what we're trying to get at, that it's that whole childlike mind. It's a philosophy. If you like this type of content, please give us a review on whatever podcast you are listening to. And then we'll be back in a week and we'll try to figure out what a topic is. But that's all we got.
All right. That was a fun talk.
Yeah, I agree. See you next week.
See ya.